Hello, and welcome to the Big Four Transparency Podcast. I'm joined today by Gene Hardy, the founder and CEO of both Creative Business Inc. and Levy. Thanks for joining me on the show, Gene.
Thanks, Dom. It's great to be here. Really excited.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. We had some conversations a little while ago, and now we finally get the opportunity to record, which brings me into you are a busy woman. And I'm very curious, maybe to start off, like, what's it like kind of running an accounting firm and then also having, you know, this business that's getting all kinds of traction, which is Levy on the side as well. I'd be curious to hear, I mean, first of all, maybe what Levy is all about, and then next, how you've been kind of balancing the two.
Well, it's a great question. It's a little crazy. It's definitely exciting. It's a lot of fun. Creative Business was started in 2005. So we've been around for a while. We're going to be 20 years in next year. And, you know, it's a really well-run machine. And what was happening there, you know, the problems that I was trying to solve as we were evolving into this more mature state and trying to scale was we just didn't have the right technology. We tried a whole bunch of different platforms and it wasn't working. And so because, you know, I'm at the point where I'm able to really focus on the business and I'm not really doing a lot of client work. I'm not, you know, working in the business. I started looking into what we could, you know, the different things we could use to move forward, and ended up not being able to find something that the team and I really aligned behind as this is going to get us to the next level. And so we started building it, and lo and behold, we built it for ourselves. So we built it for a CAS practice, an advisory practice that's trying to scale and grow and have standardize our processes and be super efficient, you know, really fully utilize our offshore team, all of those great things. And so we built it for us. And then in 2023, the whole company went on, all of our clients, and it worked so well for Creative Business that we took it to market. And so here we are in the market and we're onboarding firms. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's pretty intense, though. I have to say, technology is really, honestly, it's so creative. But it is learning like an entirely new language. Like every day, there's 1,000 things I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
In that way, it's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Well, kudos on taking that on. I love the just the general like business structure of that. Like I consume a lot of kind of media on like the entrepreneurship space and all that. And a lot of what you hear about is these internally built tools that get spun out into businesses and then they turn out to be like the best businesses ever, right? So like my what I'll call business crush has been, you know, Beehive for the longest time. And that was like a newsletter tool that was built inside of Morning Brew because they really needed that to be able to scale. And that's what I use for the Big Four Transparency newsletter. And I'm like, this is the best. And you can absolutely tell that the people who have built this are actually like doing the thing and struggling with the same issues that you're struggling with as you go through. So I have a lot of faith in Levy, you know, being kind of an excellent product, just kind of based off of that story alone.
That's my favorite thing, where I was just onboarding a firm last week, and the team, so we onboarded all the managers and then we brought the rest of their team on, and we were kind of doing a little Q&A right at the end. And it's the best feeling in the world when someone on the team is like, I can't believe you built this. This is like, it's, you thought of everything. It's exactly, you know, built for what we need to do. And, you know, I think vertical SaaS is definitely the future. And, you know, trying to take a tool that's built for general, you know, a general application or even project management, which this isn't project management. This is like work stream building, right? Or like building work that's going to continue. It reoccurs, it evolves over time. And how do you like really capture all of that and be able to use it in your firm to keep improving your services, right? To keep improving the service delivery and analyzing, you know, what you really need. So you can make a strategic hire. You can make a strategic, you know, exit a client and really know why you're doing it and make sure that it makes sense, right? All these decisions mm-hmm. that firm owners, you know, have to continuously think about. It's really hard to get data around those decisions. And with a tool like Levy, you know, talking with the owners that we're working with and talking with their teams, it's like we're giving them the window into their own business in a way that is so meaningful because those are the decisions that they're making, you know, day by day by day. And it's like the hugest win for us when we hear someone say, this is exactly what we've been looking for. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to now we're like trying to spread the word and try to get, you know, people to jump on and join us.
Awesome. Well, before kind of asking you a little bit about some of the like very specific challenges you were having, I think it'd be good to cover a little bit on like what is CAS and like why is it emerging in the way it is? Because I think I heard it first maybe like 5 months ago, 4 months ago, something like that. And now it seems like it's like the only thing I see on like tax Twitter, LinkedIn and all that. And obviously I've curated a bit of a, you know, the people I follow, but yeah. It seems like this has really kind of come out and has become like quite a movement in accounting firms to like start implementing CAS. So yeah, would you be able to kind of share what it is and what makes it unique?
Well, I think like what does CAS, C-A-S stand for is still kind of a question mark. We were just talking about this, but like, yeah, people say it stands for a number of different things. So I like to think about it as like, let's say complete advisory services, or, you know, some say it's client accounting services, but then why do we need CAS if there's already accounting services out there, right? So client advisory services, I think CAS is the future for firms of any size. I think it also, there's an interesting moment now where people who have left larger firms have started their own firms. You know, they're doing the tax work, but they also actually are super interested in taking on a more advisory role with their clients because, frankly, it's a lot of fun. It's really fulfilling work to provide that value service. And there's a ton to do there. Like, you know, I feel like businesses, you know, just from being around for 20 years, the way that accountants, you know, work with businesses is very different now than the way that it used to be. You know, it'd be like we would be showing accountants books either monthly, or accountants would come to businesses like monthly and sit down with the owners and look at the books and look at the reports, you know. And now accountants don't look at the, you know, they don't always look at what's going on in the business until they're doing the tax return, right? So so it's kind of up to the bookkeepers and the controllers and the CFOs to sort of push that information to the accountants all throughout the year to make sure that they're in the loop on major changes and transitions that are happening in the company. So it's a really necessary thing for accountants to be able to do these days because businesses are faced with kind of an unprecedented amount of complex decisions that they need to make. I think what you're seeing when you talk about, like, I haven't heard about CAS in the last 4 or 5 years, I really think what happened through COVID, through the pandemic, was really instrumental. And it wasn't the, you know, there was like 2008 and 2009, the, you know, the banking crisis and the recession. And then there's, you know, then what happened with COVID, it was businesses are really constantly struggling to recover from these like major, you know, economic, incidences that happen. And then something like COVID really sort of threw these businesses into the arms of the accountant saying like, help me get the PPPs, help me like understand, yeah, like, can I survive? How long am I going to make it through this year? And, I think businesses trying to find a partner in their tax team or their financial team. That's someone like outside that works with other companies that could say, what about the rest of the companies that you're working with? Like, what are they doing? You know, that kind of advisory service is so critical right now to businesses.
Yeah. And it's funny, like there's some pretty blatantly obvious seeming things when you're in that world that can actually like make all the difference to a business. So like where I was working, I was in FP&A, and you know, at a time where everyone's talking about layoffs and all that, and just like a small question of like, hey, like where's our money sitting right now? And it wasn't being invested into like treasuries or anything really. You know, probably saved 4 or 5 people's jobs by just being able to be like, hey, you can be earning 5% on this pretty easily. It was like a day of work and meant like $700,000 for the business. And it was just something that like is absolutely blatantly obvious to someone in that world, but to like a business owner or someone like that, like you might never think of these things. And you know, so the ROI on some of this is like, yeah, like a day of my work for several hundred thousand dollars is pretty wicked. And like the less internal support that you have at your company, the more likely it is that there's this kind of like low hanging fruit that someone who's well versed in that world might be able to find, right?
Absolutely.
And even just like some owners operating blind, like there was no like cash flow projections and stuff like that. I think that's like a really good place for like CAS services to be able to step in. So
Seems daunting, you know, to put like a financial model together, you know, for a business owner. You know, they have they're kind of like operating in sort of like in their own area of knowledge, right? And when you think about the financial department, like everything should be vetted through the financial department of your business, right? But when you say, okay, well, what's your financial department look like? And the business is like, not that, maybe it's one person, maybe it's an outsourced bookkeeper and my accountant. So two people that are, you know, might not even talk to each other very often, right? And compare notes. We spend a lot of time with our businesses getting them to get us into the meetings with the salespeople, the marketing people. Like we want people accountable for their budgets. We want to build that financial model around each business activity that's impacting the financials and making sure that the owners understand how that all sits together and how, you know, and I think when you can like illuminate that for even the marketing team, they get excited. Like they actually like to have some kind of parameter or some budget to work with. Right. So it is something that working across multiple different businesses, you can start to see the weak link, right? You just say, oh, you know what, this other company is so well run. And I think that's because they have these regular meetings. They have these regular sharing moments. Let's try that here. And I think you guys will get a lot of benefit out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's always like a benefit to having some things like outsourced, like bringing in, you know, a team of professionals to do it. While like, yeah, there's often like some savings to be had by having things in house once you reach a certain scale. But like, I do think that the normalization of outsourced services for that is really good, because you can bridge that gap where maybe you just need like a half of an accountant extra, or your controller right now is just like so deep underwater that like there's no way that they're going to have any time to look at treasury, FP&A activities, things like that. So I think it's really, really valuable to kind of have that in businesses. So it makes sense to me that, you know, this is growing so much.
Yeah, I think business owners actually appreciate, like, I think now more than ever before, when you say, you know, I think you really would benefit from having a fractional CFO. You know, 5-6 years ago, people would be like, I can't afford that, or I don't, you know, that's my bookkeeper's fine, or but now I feel like business owners really understand the value of having somebody who's doing this for a lot of different companies to just kind of drop in and supervise and say, you know what, like you're not even using the right software for your company. And your bookkeeper was your administrative assistant, and they've grown into this role. And, you know, they could actually, they're doing a fine job, but they could actually, you know, up their skills, and they actually want to grow in their position, and maybe some additional training would be helpful. Or your bookkeeper actually needs an assistant. Mm-hmm. Your bookkeeper is fantastic, but you're like not even utilizing their, you know, their like great knowledge because they're entering payables all day long kind of thing. So I think having somebody drop in even quarterly and, you know, ask some questions would be, is super beneficial for any business. And it's great. So accounting firms, you know, are looking for, to add services, right? And to, you know, find ways to increase pricing, right? Possibly move to more retainer-based or, you know, fee-based pricing.
Yeah.
And the compliance work is not as robust as it used to be, right? Or maybe it's not as interesting to the firm owners at this point. But having a way to offer different services to your existing client base is kind of textbook growth strategy. Like we have users. What else can we do for them? You know, they already trust us. We have all, like, how can we leverage our existing relationships to grow the firm and be more profitable? So it's a really kind of standard business growth hack to start with what you have. Yeah.
I want to touch on that a little bit. So in an episode I did with Zane Stevens of Protea, we talked actually about how like scope limitations can be a huge benefit to your business as well. Because he was talking about like, they don't do taxes. They get a ton of referral from tax firms. They don't do, you know, whatever it might be. I don't want to misquote, maybe wealth management. They get a lot of referrals from there, I think he was saying. And because they kind of stay in their lane, people feel really good about bringing them in on their clients. Now, creative business, my understanding from our previous conversation is you don't do taxes, but you've kind of expanded into like virtual CFO, virtual CMO, virtual CHRO. Like you've really, really broadened the scope of what you're offering. So I'm curious to know a little bit, like, strategically, what does that kind of look like? And then, you know, realistically, like, how many of these services are you usually able to kind of like cross offer to the same client base?
So, well, creative business has a couple of different divisions. So while we are niche in creative industry clients, so what we did is we started in, you know, we have design, architecture, industrial design. We have e-commerce, which are, you know, makers, brands, lifestyle brands. And then we have, you know, a fine arts division, right? But what happens across all of those is that there are these complementary industries that support each of those divisions, right? Mm-hmm. Like 3D printing, right?
Yeah.
Things like that. And so our growth strategy was, so if we're working with a number of architecture firms, why aren't we working with all the interior designers that they're also working with? Why aren't we working with all of their, you know, all of their industrial designers or furniture designers, right? At the same time, you know, we have e-commerce. Why aren't we working with all of their social media managers, all their creative agencies, right? And so that was our you know, kind of growth strategy. Is like, we don't just want the niche, we want the complementary industries that are orbiting that niche and servicing that niche. And to your point, that's actually how we get our referrals, because creative industry companies, because they're working together, they share, like, no, I have a great digital agency. They'll share that across their peers. Well, we got into that sharing conversation too. So they say, you know, who does your bookkeeping? Who does your, you know, who's your CFO? And they create a business. So I think that's a terrific strategy for any firm that's trying to, number one, create a niche, and then kind of create that sort of flywheel of referrals that, you know, you don't have to niche into like architecture only, like the kind of the broader industry around architecture and let it live there. Right. We don't do, taxes, never had the desire to do that because the work that we do is just too much fun. So the way that we expanded our bench, our advisory bench, was pretty intentional. We were already doing a lot of CFO advisory work, and we were also doing a lot of HR work for our clients, just kind of within our existing scope. And when we started to notice a pattern that, like, you know, more and more of these companies are utilizing a lot of the CFO work, and it was kind of, we kind of were formalizing the service of CFO because the companies we work with aren't enormous and they're not overly complicated. Mm-hmm. We did have this standard playbook for how we approach CFO advisory. It's a really comprehensive approach to it. We're always kind of experimenting with our services, but we decided to like separate it out and say, you know what, it's going to be, we're going to offer this kind of a la carte and see if we can make that work. Mm-hmm. So when we started doing that, it was a little tricky in the beginning, but once we got kind of the messaging around, you know, what we mean by CFO advisory and why it would be useful and how we could sort of layer it into the kind of day-to-day controller work and accounting work we were doing, the team actually, the bookkeeping team and the client managers started offering that service right on the front line. So it wasn't even something that was being sold, you know, from the beginning. It was like, you know what? Yeah, you want to hire, or you have, you know, your payroll's getting really hot. You know, maybe you should talk to one of our CFOs. Mm-hmm. People were having, you know, a lot with, during the pandemic. We had a huge surge for requests in HR services because a lot of people's employees were going remote. They're in multi-states. There was a lot of complexity there, and the kind of boots on the ground team was saying, why don't you talk to one of our HR consultants? When they were selling the service for us, so mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we expanded it. It was surprising to us actually at how much appetite there was for those advisory services just in our existing book of business. And then when you take it on the biz dev front and you say, you know, we can work with you just as an outsourced CFO. You don't have to have the back office. Mm-hmm. You know, that got really interesting too. So, because then eventually you get the back office, like that's.
Yeah. No, that's cool that it was like very organic, just kind of like based on following demand, being flexible, which, you know, good on you for being flexible. Cause I think a lot of people kind of put themselves in a box and they're like, no, this is what I offer. I can't do that. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas I think just by being in so many businesses and whatnot, you learn to, you know, help them out in every which way. So, that's really interesting. In terms of
measure, you know, you have to be sure that you're, you know, just like what a CFO would tell your client, you have to measure, like, this is our expectation. We think this is going to be, you know, 20% of our revenue this year. This is going to be like, how do we know that we're actually doing this properly and we're charging the right amount and all of that. And, so we've kind of built a strategy and we had our assumptions and then we were like constantly like testing our assumptions all the way through. So,
yeah. So in terms of the niche that you have of like serving creative businesses and other businesses in their orbit, like what makes serving these companies unique? Is it like, you know, the timing of cash flows being maybe more sporadic? Is it like even just like the personality of the people that you're usually interfacing with, or like, what is it that makes this like a good niche where by being focused on this subset of customers, you're able to do a better job?
I think the most common thread is that they are reluctant entrepreneurs.
Okay. Interesting.
They're amazingly talented. I mean, we're lucky. We work with with companies with owners that are at the top of their industry. So mm-hmm. they're all really impressive and brilliant people, and wildly creative. They're doing incredible things all around the world. They're speaking. They're, you know, socially active, and they're, you know, they're activists. They're you know, they're innovators. They're, you know, and we get to work with them. So that is fantastic. Then you like pull back the curtain, and they feel like I never wanted to have a business. I never wanted to be doing, you know, be worried about this stuff. And there's I just think this is just the way creatives at art school and, you know, they don't have the confidence in the financial piece of it, that they do on the actual product that they're making and delivering. And I think being able to support them and to build that confidence is, you know, one of the most fulfilling parts of this job, to be like, you're brilliant and you're going to be brilliant at this too. And we've come up with a way of really sort of telling them, like, you know, agreeing that they're brilliant, but also helping them sort of understand and build that financial acumen through their business and to be able to demonstrate that to their teams. And you know, there's a lot of moments when you're talking to people about money and you're a business owner and it's uncomfortable, right? It's like owning your number when you're negotiating a contract, right? Like these architects, they're negotiating, and it's a tough negotiation, and you know, they can't cave, right? They've got to like push all the way through and hold on to as much as they can. And I think there's an art to that, actually, right? Like you don't you want the client to say yes, and you want the client to like you, and you want it to be a good working relationship. But at the same time, you know, you need to make what you need to make, right?
Yeah.
And owning that number is that like first kind of, you know, staking that like first bit of confidence. Like, actually, I built this number up, and this is something that CFOs are so great at doing for owners that do professional services like that, and they have to build this whole, you know, agreement and contract and then go and negotiate it. And it's like, you could get them to brick by brick where that number came from, why, you know, you only can negotiate this percent of it. It gives them a ton of confidence going into that conversation where they need to land and how they can speak to it.
So, I love that.
Yeah.
Pricing is so hard. Yeah.
It's
and
so
it's
emotional.
Like,
yeah, it's,
yeah, really it's very difficult. And I think, again, like there's like a personality trait, you know, I've had these conversations with a lot of people here, but there's like a certain personality trait of like people who like to really get into like pricing arguments and like the overlap of that and like accountants and probably creatives in general is probably very, very small. Like most people really want to stay out of that. So I think that's really important what you're doing.
But that's a huge value right there for anyone doing advisory work, like, you know, but creatives especially, they don't think they're good at numbers. And when my experience is, you know, once they sort of understand the financial model and they understand like what the drivers are and what they should be, where they need to really focus their attention, they're fantastic at it.
Nice. So something a little bit more about like your role with Creative Business, but at the beginning I kind of mentioned, you're doing Creative Business and Levy at the same time. And you mentioned that you're no longer working in the business, and that's what made that possible. What sort of was required for you to be able to kind of step back from, you know, the more kind of day-to-day task and now being, you know, what seems more like maybe like a strategic kind of CEO type role? Are there key things that you did that have helped you achieve that along the way?
Yes. I mean, I have to say that being in business for 20 years, there's a lot of things that are on LinkedIn that, you know, there's a lot of things that are easier said than done. And, you know, being in business all these years, and I've literally made every single mistake in the book. So there's a lot of trial and error, and I think that that's okay. I think business owners need to give themselves grace on that. Like, there's a lot of trial and error. Sometimes you just don't know until you know. So that said, yes, I was lucky enough to have an incredible team, a team that's been super loyal. I have people on my team that have been with me for 15, 16 years. And so they've evolved as I evolved as a CEO. And over the years, I was able to build a really strong management team. So it kind of gets to the point when you're doing this kind of work that the team becomes a lot better than you are at it. And I think that that's when you recognize, you know what? Actually, they actually know the answer to this better than I do. And I think that's kind of, you know, the last probably 5 years, it's sort of like kind of stepped back and sort of handed over some decision making areas of the business to the team. So I still meet with the management team every week. And I meet with the whole team on Mondays. I like to be involved. They bring me in on certain client things. I have a as needed. I like to meet people that we're hiring, but they actually do all the interviews, and the team really, you know, they really know what they're looking for and what skills and how to vet them. So like, as you know, as it became really apparent to me that this management team is super smart and they know what they're doing, and they, you know, I just started kind of letting them run with it. And then they allowed me to kind of step back and focus on Levy when I was building it, and they were involved in all of the development and the testing. Like, literally Creative Business was, you know, they were my partners in developing the product over the years. So,
And what's been your strategy to like retain these people for so long? Like, have there been kind of like key, you know, strategies that you've taken that have allowed you to have these employees who've been there for, you know, 12, 15 years and who've been able to kind of take over some of the operations?
Well, I mean, I really believe that, you know, our philosophy at Creative Business is like, it has to be good. It has to be good for the client, and it has to be good for the team. Whatever, whether the scope, the type of client that you're matched, it has to be good for both, or it's never going to work. And I think, you know, a mistake that people make, because we've worked with other kind of outsource advisors, the mistake that people make with their teams is not actually understanding how to build a portfolio for them, of work for them. Mm. And, you know, I like to match clients with the interests. So when we hire somebody, it's like, what kind of industries, what are you into? Like, are they on Instagram all the time? Do they, like, here's our clients, which ones of those are exciting for you? And it's not like they can pick whatever clients they want to work with. That's not what I'm saying, but it's like getting a sense of like, if they're interested in, you know, retail and they're following all of our clients on Instagram, that person is going to have a lot more fun at work. And the clients are going to be really excited to have them on the team if they're like all over their Instagram and are like, oh, I saw that campaign, that was so good, you know. Whereas other people are not, you know, aren't interested in that, but they're interested in, you know, fine arts, or they're interested in travel, or they're interested in, you know, one of the other areas. So really understanding like where the interest lies and trying to build a work life that takes that into account, I think has been a really winning strategy for us. you know, I always say it's, this work is hard. It's really, really hard. And the stakes are high. Like, you can't make mistakes. And unfortunately, it's not one of those, like, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
Not in this business. It's like, even though everybody makes mistakes, but it's really hard. It's hard for the client, but it's really hard for the person who makes mistakes.
Yeah. That's a really unique answer to that question. And I really, really like it. Where I worked, there was like professional athletes, you know, we, I guess, had the clients of one of the, I think, agencies or something like that. And there was a whole team of people who were just working with professional athletes in my office.
Wow.
And like, I actually like looked at the work when I was working in tax. I looked at the work and I was like, this looks so bad. Like, it did not seem like particularly fun work. Yeah. But people were really pumped, yeah, because they were like such huge fans of this person that they were working on. And although they couldn't say the names publicly, like, that just makes it cool. And they could talk with other people in their teams. So I've seen that firsthand. And like, again, this particular subset of work was like cross-border tax, like, did not seem like fun work, but people were pumped about it just because, yeah, of who it was for, right? So I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you've just kind of shared. So
yeah, we have a channel on Slack that we post, you know, because our clients are, again, they're like really, you know, incredible people. And everybody posts things. They're in the New York Times, they're in here, they're on TV, here's this thing, you know, all of they're having a show in this channel. And it's they're really proud of the clients that they work for. They get to, we have, you know, these on Wednesday meetings, they get to present a client where they talk about the work that they do. They do like a slideshow of, you know, how they're working with the client, but also like who the client is and all the interesting thing they're doing. So I think that's really key for this kind of work.
I love it. Okay. And one last thing before I let you go, what is like the trigger that firms, particularly firms with a CAS offering, should be looking for where they should consider maybe now it's time for levy? Like, it was there like an aha moment, even maybe at your own firm, where you realized that what's out there just isn't cutting it and you need something new?
Yeah. Well, I think right from the beginning, is if you want to add CAS to your offering, you need to think about it in terms of planning the work and making sure everybody that's working on this client actually understands what your firm is doing for this client. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that all the information, all the client knowledge gets captured from all the different stakeholders that are working on it, and it's being saved in a place that makes it accessible for all the people that are going to need it, right? Mm-hmm. What's missing in a lot of the tools is the visibility around the work, the client knowledge, the ability to share and communicate in the platform about the work, about the client. For us, the value add for, you know, for having levy is that we can see that the capacity planning is like really, it really optimizes capacity. And right away, like as soon as you get on levy, you can see like where the time is going, where the budgets are going, how your team is thinking about the work that they're planning for their clients. Because you have this framework built into levy from the beginning. So you add a client, you add the workflows, and it starts to measure like how much time you're planning for this client versus how much time you're actually are earning, you know, from this client. Mm-hmm. So, and it's because it's totally transparent to everybody that's working on the client, people start to self-manage. Because when you give people tons of context around their work and what the expectation is, like, this should take 3 hours. We think this should take. It's not a right or wrong. It's saying our assumption going into this engagement puts it in this parameter. It's up to you to tell me that that's not the right. Those aren't the right numbers. Those aren't the right hours.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the team working knows that managers can see what they're being scheduled for, what work is on their plate at any given moment in real time. And And so they have the comfort knowing that they're being seen, right? That they have, we know what you're doing. We know how much hours you have this week, and we're not going to overschedule you. Because the other mistake that happens in CAS is that the strongest players on the team, the work just gets piled onto them, right?
Yeah.
And they sometimes can't even, sometimes those people don't even realize how much more work has been given to them, how many hours it's going to take. So I think like right from the beginning, if you want to start building a team and you want to get that team to be confident in your ability to plan and execute on this work, if you've never done so, you need Levy for sure. If you want your team to communicate to you about the clients and where they're at and what's going on with the work, you need Levy. This kind of work, you cannot manage it three managers deep. You need to manage it really, really close to where the work is happening, because that's where everything falls apart, basically. Like,
yeah.
You can't have like a manager and then another manager and then another manager. Like, it's got to be very flat, and you need a way for people to really keep communicating very close to where the work is at. So.
Awesome. Well, I'll be sure to link that in the podcast notes as well. And thank you so much for joining me on the pod, Gene. I really appreciate it. It's been a long time in the works, so I'm happy we finally kind of managed to get this on the books. So thank you. Thank you very much.